And welcome back to Coast. We're with Sarah Scholes, and her book is called They Are Already Here. The book is already out, and we're going to take your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Sarah Scholes with us, of course, and we are going to take your calls with her as we talk about UFOs. Her latest book is called They Are Already Here. Sarah, do you sometimes ever pray?
I do not. I did when I was growing up, but I do not now, no.
You do not. So when you, when you're in that mode where you need help from something, where do you reach?
I guess on a good day, I reach inside myself, and maybe talk to a good friend or a family member, and reach out to the humans on the terrestrial planet who I know who can help.
Do you ever think back to the days when you were a kid and you said, well, even it was your first year of college, you weren't just a kid, that I used to believe and I just don't anymore? I can't.
I do think about that often. My life was very different then, and my interactions with the world were very different then. And in a lot of ways, it was a lot more comforting than it is now, because there is not a higher power to reach out to for me. But I'm still here. It's going okay so far.
Can you believe in extraterrestrial existence without believing in God? Can you do that?
I think so. I think it's possible. If you can believe that we emerged here without believing in God through the primordial soup or whatever it is, then you could believe that the same thing happened somewhere else.
All right, let's take some calls for you. Have some fun with our great listeners. Alan is a first-time caller, truck driving in Michigan, my old home state. Hi, Alan.
Hi, George, Sarah.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, like, I'm thinking that, you got all these alien abductions because we're a farm of genetic material for dying alien races that can't reproduce anymore.
We might. Is that your question or statement?
That's my statement. I mean, they abduct our males, they take sperm from our males, they take eggs from our females, and they put them there together with their genetic material and impregnate our women. And 2 months later, they come back and get the fetus.
Well, that's what some people have been saying for a long, long time. You've heard those stories, haven't you, Sarah?
I have heard those stories, yes. They're part of our cultural ideas about what aliens might be doing. And like a lot of things having to do with aliens, it's an interesting idea, but I haven't ever seen the evidence to back it up. But if the caller can gather it, please share it with us.
Dr. J. Allen Hynek, you familiar with his name?
Sure.
Was a skeptic with Project Blue Book. Something happened to him. He saw a case of a police officer in Socorro, New Mexico, named Lonnie Zamora, who's not with us anymore. And Lonnie, when he was cruising along the desert, saw what he called was an accident of a car flipped over. As he got closer to it, he realized it wasn't a car, and it wasn't flipped over. It was a craft on a tripod with a couple aliens scurrying around out there. They saw him. They jumped in the craft. They got up and left. Now, this comes from a police officer who had no reason to lie at all, did not need the notoriety. But Hynek said that case changed his mind, and he went from being the swamp gas guy, which I'm convinced he was told to say, to a believer. What will it take for Sarah Scholes to become that believer?
Maybe I could experience the same thing as him, and we could see if I react the same way.
That would do it, wouldn't it?
Maybe they could arrange it for me.
You never know.
Never know.
Well, what if they abduct you? That would do it, too.
As long as they put me back and I can come back to tell my story.
I mean, how do you explain Travis Walton, who passed a lie detector test, and all his buddies did?
I don't have an explanation for Travis Walton.
I mean, it's amazing stuff. Nancy in Minnesota, welcome to the program. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
And my comment is, how can you look up there in the heavens and not believe in a creator? And I look at what's going on up there, according to the book of like Daniel, where what's happening up there is the same as what's happening on Earth, that the angels and the higher entities are fighting the devils, and up there, just as we are fighting them here on Earth. And so I don't quite understand, and I don't know her age, and I somehow think that with time and age that that there's possibility for change. But at the same time, I think it's easily to become disenchanted with a religion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, organized religion, look at it these days. A lot of people are disenfranchised with it and disenchanted with it as well. But go ahead, sir. You want to react to some of that?
Sure. I turned 35 in a few days. But
happy birthday.
I guess, thank you. I think that, you know, it's a good question, and I understand why lots of people think differently than me about, you know, God and spirituality. And I think that's all very valid. And for me, when I almost find it even more inspiring I'm trying not to use the word wondrous because it's kind of a corny word, but to look up at the sky and see all of this stuff and think that it happens through the laws of physics and the initial state of the universe, like that feels amazing and almost kind of spiritual to me, in the same way that I think that religion does for a lot of people. So I don't feel like I'm lacking in that feeling, even if our interpretations are different.
Would you like to believe in God?
No, I don't think so.
It doesn't have anything to do.
In God.
But. There's the one thing about you is you don't put other people down who do believe in God.
No, not at all.
That's not you.
That is the thing I did when I was even younger than I do now, but I got over that pretty quickly. That's not a thing that appeals to me anymore.
Let's go to Pennsylvania. Walter's with us. Welcome to the program. Walt, go ahead.
Hi, George. Always great to talk to you.
Hey, Walter.
Sarah's a girl after my own heart, although I'm twice her age, just about. I'm 69 years old, as you know, George. George, people, the Bible thumpers may call people like myself and Sarah skeptics, but, George, to me, the real skeptics are people who can stand at the edge of the Grand Canyon and look down into billions of years of geologic strata and conclude that, as the Bible alleges, that this earth is less than 6,000 years old. That's the real skeptic, George. The Bible believers are the real skeptics.
Not even I believe that.
George, to deny evolution is to deny reality itself. To deny evolution, you're denying Earth evolution, all the, you know, going back to the Precambrian, Cambrian, the geologic ages. You're denying the dinosaurs ever walked the earth. George, you know, I come from coal country here in Pennsylvania, and you can hold a piece of coal in your hand, and George, that piece of coal is hundreds of millions of years older than any dinosaur fossil that was ever discovered.
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know, George, to deny evolution is just to deny reality itself. I mean, it is the most proven tenet
But can't you have evolution and spirituality too, together?
Well, George, you know, when you talk about God, I mean, George, as I've said, the Bible, Yahweh, Jehovah, George, he has the morals of Hitler. I mean, George, he's a genocidal mass murderer. You know, he's starting with the Great Flood, and, you know, he gets Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, there were innocent children in Sodom and Gomorrah. And, you know, the famous Passover story where he sends the angel of death down. And even after the, you know, as the tale, the epic tale of the Jewish people goes, even after they're released from bondage and they come into the land of milk and honey, then Yahweh Jehovah says to them, well, when you see these Canaanites there, you know, you can enslave and kill them, you know. So, George, he's given the ancient Israelites, he's telling them that they can be Nazis.
Well, don't believe everything you read in the Bible.
George, I mean, you know what I mean? It's a preposterous to take the Bible seriously, really.
So they're going to come out and get you, Walter.
Yeah, I guess, George, I guess sooner or later, I mean.
We won't broadcast your address, unlike some media people. What do you think, Sarah? He agrees with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first part of his comment, he's kind of getting at exactly the kind of thing I was saying in response to the previous caller, which is, you know, the Earth version. If you look at the Grand Canyon, you think about all the time and the physics and the, you know, state of the Earth that went into that whole thing. Like, that is also inspiring and more awe-inspiring than somebody coming in 6,000 years ago and crafting it. Not that you think that, and so I think we agree on that. I'm going to leave the Bible stuff alone on that one.
That might be smart. Frank's in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
I just want to make a couple of comments about UFOs. If these crafts are 100,000 years ahead of us in technology, why do they crash? Air Force One can avoid missiles to some extent. Why did they crash? Why do they not return fire when they're shot at with a missile? Could it be that they don't know what killing is? And then you had two or three callers in over the last two or three years that saw this black triangle in space. They claimed it to be two football fields long. I saw such a thing, but the lights on it were too perfect. It was too perfect a triangle. I think it was a ship of some kind with a hologram. A cover of a hologram to make it look different than it actually is. And then one other thing, my only UFO craft I saw, it was high in the sky. It was a gold color. It had no discernible lights or weapons turrets, and its fuselage was its light. It was so bright. And I was wondering, what could that be? Now, if this is part of the space force, they need somewhere, like a racehorse, they need space to work out the kinks in it.
Although we might have a secret space force, Frank, I'm not sure we have that kind of technology. Why they crash is a question I ask all the time, too. If they're supposed to get here from millions and millions of miles away, maybe even billions, how could they crash with that kind of technology? It doesn't make sense. And some of the remarks about how they crash with, you know, a lightning storm or something, I still don't accept that at all. And I guess, Sarah, you can't answer that because you don't believe they're here.
No, but I also wonder, I mean, from the ufologist's perspective, you know, the explanation for why they crashed, the only satisfying one I've heard from a ufologist is that, you know, they were built on planets very different from here, and that it would be fairly impossible to know exactly what the conditions were on Earth and to build your spacecraft for that. But I mean, I do think that, like, if the caller said they exist, are here, and are very far ahead of us, it's hard to believe they wouldn't engineer for lots of different possibilities.
And we take a text or tweet for you. Tom, what do you have for Sarah?
Sarah, this in from Jesse in Orlando, Florida. What's the one strongest thing that makes you not believe in a God?
Something got you to stop thinking of that. Because you did go from being a believer to a non-believer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar to not believing that UFOs are extraterrestrial craft, just that I don't have any evidence in favor of that hypothesis. And I, I feel like I would need some.
Did you pray to God for something and it didn't happen, and therefore you lost faith and confidence in that?
No, not at all.
Nothing like that.
Once I left the organized religion that I was part of, it just didn't feel like it made sense to me that there was a God. And I will say that for a long time, I would have called myself atheist. Like, I know for sure there is no God, but I have said 1,000 times on this show for UFOs, I would call myself agnostic now, because I think it would be very arrogant of me to presume that I knew anything about any of it.
So, well, at least your guts enough to say how you feel. Peter in Utah, welcome to the program. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Okay, Pete. Thank you.
Let me get inside here. Really quick, I'd just like to say to Sarah they are here. You know, they've been here for a long time. I've been having experiences since I was a teenager.
They've been.
I'm about 30 years old now. One of the first. My very first one, shared a room with my brother, and I'm looking out the night sky, listening to music before I go to bed. All of a sudden, I just see these ambery, orangish colored orbs just kind of floating through the sky from behind the tree. There are about 7 of them total, just 7 lights, formed a little triangle-y formations, and I try waking my brother up, but he's not waking up, so I'm slapping him in the face. I went so far as I pulled him off of his bed. He smacks on the ground, just big thud.
And he still didn't wake up?
Still didn't wake up. I pick him up, put him on my bed. I turned his head towards, so all he had to do was just open his eyes. And I'm slapping him in the face. Mitchell, wake up. And he's just, he's not waking up. So I see, oh, crap, they're going down the alley in between the houses. I rushed outside just in time to see the last little orb just kind of hover right there, and I went right underneath it, and it just shot straight up into the sky until it was the size of a star and just gone.
And I bet these are real episodes, too. They just really, really happen. And you can't deny that... Something is going on. That's the weird part. We're going to come back in a moment and take final calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. It's Sarah Scholes with us. Her book is called They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Would you believe those saucers might be earthbound, don't you?
I believe they might be. But I don't know.
What is your true feeling tell you about the possibility that we have these things on our planet, that we made them?
I think that is the explanation that we have the most evidence for, but also that we that we don't know. And, you know, there are people high up in the military and intelligence communities who are saying that they and their investigations can't explain what they are seeing. So, yeah, I mean, this isn't the fun of UFOs, but we don't know, and it's kind of a mystery.
And I got to say, though, Sarah, that will your beliefs change from things we already know as opposed to, a flying saucer landing on your front grass or anything like that?
You mean if I heard things from the past, could those change my mind?
Could you be convinced otherwise?
I think that I can. I think of myself as a person who is open to new ideas and new stories and new data. And I think that's a fundamental part of being, I'm not a scientist, but of being a scientist and also of my job, which is being a journalist. You're supposed to go into things without a whole lot of preconceived notions and be open to what comes to you. So I think it would take a lot, but I don't think it's impossible.
Let's go to the final callers, Joe in Maryland, to get us started. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? How you doing, Miss Sarah?
Thanks, Joe. Good.
Hi.
I think we can rule out these crafts being from the United States, because every time these crafts show up over every different country, each country sends their most advanced aircraft up and locks weapons on it and fires upon it. So the way we react to seeing UFOs, we attack them. We should be at war with all these UFOs. Now, how do you explain, in your own minds, your own theories that we're not at a constant state of war with these unidentified flying objects?
Interesting perspective, Sarah.
That is an interesting perspective, and it's a good point. If I were driving a flying saucer, I might think twice about flying it over Earth. But if we're going to talk about them as alien craft, which, you know, as people have been listening, they know is not necessarily what I subscribe to. You know, there are a lot of scientists who talk about if there are advanced alien civilizations that have been able to build technology far in advance of ours and survive for a long time, then they might be peaceful, and that's why they haven't, you know, bombed each other to death or messed up their planet so that they can't survive, and so that maybe civilizations that survive for a long time are fundamentally peaceful. And also maybe they just have great, they haven't, for the most part, been shot down, so maybe they just have good evasive maneuvers that are peaceful.
Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hello, Joseph. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure, Joe.
By the way, I'm going to ask two questions. They're important questions, not just for your guests, but for people in general, and especially scientists. You had two callers. They said something about the Cambria explosion, a thing about panspermia. So we won't. That's to answer that question. And to answer your question, they gave us that UFO. That wasn't a crash. Okay.
Who's they?
Now, the two questions are, why would they make contact with us, and why would they not make contact with us? And I already know the answers, but these are good questions.
Well, she can't answer the first one because she doesn't believe they've made contact with us.
Well, if you answer the second one, why wouldn't they make contact with us?
Well, she doesn't believe they're here to do that.
Well, these are the questions that should be answered by scientists.
But go ahead, Sarah. Give it a try.
I
don't want to put words in your mouth.
You can answer them as a hypothetical. And I also think that SETI scientists have to think about them a lot if they're not thinking about spacecraft, but thinking about broadcasts or signals from other civilizations. One answer is maybe curiosity, like we have, and a desire to explore and a desire to say hello to other things that are out there in the universe, could be something that we share. Then there are, darker hypotheses, like you see in some science fiction and scholarship where they would like to dominate us, and so they have to let us know that they're here. In terms of not making contact, I mean, maybe our desire for connection and exploration and things like that are just human, and it's not some natural consequence of evolution that we ended up that way. It's not necessary. And so maybe there are very smart beings that live on another planet that just don't care what's up there. And then also, I mean, there are things like, I think about this a lot for Earth, where, you know, space exploration programs and even a broadcasting program would be very expensive, very long-term, and on any planet, there's always going to be very pressing problems on the ground that you could be spending your money on instead.
Tom has a final text or tweet for you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, this one from Rick in Connecticut. Please ask Sarah why she thinks Stanton Friedman, a smart person, would believe in UFOs if indeed there were none.
The late Stanton Friedman.
The late Stanton Friedman. We miss him.
Yep, we do. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I haven't said that there are none, and I haven't said that I know what they are. I think Stanton Friedman was a very smart person and a great researcher, investigator, and archivist. And I think that, you know, he had lots of reasons and data for believing what he believed, and we're just not coming from the same place, but that doesn't mean I have to respect someone any less, I think.
Do you think you will change your views about ETs, realistically?
Barring something truly exceptional, probably not, but I try to leave room for the truly exceptional because strange things happen all the time.
Are you aware of the 1997 Phoenix Lights episode?
I am, yes.
All these people saw this huge triangular-shaped object. What the heck were they looking at?
If I had the answer, I would have written a different book. I don't know what they were looking at.
Can you speculate?
No.
Are you baffled about that story?
Yeah, I think anytime, especially when there are lots of witnesses describing something similar, that is very compelling. Yes.
I mean, because we don't have anything like this. I remember back in 97, I was in St. Louis doing my local show there, and I think the same object was seen over Millstadt, Illinois, reported by police officers. Now, there's an Air Force base out that way, and I thought maybe this thing was hidden away there, but then all of a sudden it ended up over Phoenix within a couple hours. It was a weird story. There's just something going on here, something strange. Let's go to Francis in Columbia, Missouri. Welcome to the program. Hi, Francis.
Yes, I have an interesting quick story for you. My brother and I are both Russian orphans, and we were adopted and brought to the United States. And we have some peculiar things about us. We both were nonverbal, mental problems until the age of 11. All we ever did was write down the number 00 and 11 in notebooks and talk, you know, we were very nonverbal. We both have excessively large heads, and shovel teeth, and nobody really has explanation for that. We don't know our parents, we don't know our origins, but eventually they worked with us and we became better with things, but I often have dreams where I'm traveling through space and I'm fascinated with stars.
Interesting. Francis, I mean, do you have big eyes?
They're not necessarily big, but they do protrude a bit, and it's not a thyroid issue, but they do protrude a little.
Do you?
They're not like an alien, but they do stick out a little.
In the size of your head, like an alien gray, is it that shape?
Oh, no, George. It's not like that, but I do wear a size 12 baseball cap. That is rather...
That's a big baseball cap.
Yes, most people wear a size 8, and my brother and I, we both have very large heads.
Were you two twins?
Yes.
Okay. And were you ever able to find out anything about your past family?
Biological parents, no. Nope. It's always been a mystery.
Do you think you're the product of an extraterrestrial breeding?
I would hate to speculate, but sometimes I feel as though I don't fit in, and I do just daydream about traveling within the stars.
That's interesting. Sarah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has an interesting story, and I would like to read his book about life and experiences and things like that and just know more about it.
It's truly remarkable. If you can, Francis, send us a picture of you. I'm just curious. At george@coasttocoastam.com, if you would. We won't post it on the website or anything like that, but just like to see what you look like. And who knows, Sarah? That's the one of the wonders of this planet. It's full of mysteries. You got to agree with me there, right?
Yeah. Actually, that is the conclusion I came to in the book, is that the one thing that I know for sure that I believe in is that we don't know very much about the universe, and lots of the things we do know we're not actually quite certain about. So I think we can agree on that.
Well, let's go to Irene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hello, Irene.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When I was younger and everything else, and I was old, I was 71, so I was about 20, 21 years old, and I'd sit there and come home with a friend, and we were sitting there in the driveway. It was a beautiful night. It was the end of August of 1971. Skies were clear, probably about 70 degrees. Looked above our house because shadows were gone. It was a full moon, and there was this huge object sitting above the house. I mean, it was like about 65 feet up in the air, because it was like we had an old one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
And I could not, there wasn't a sound coming out of it. There's no lights on it whatsoever. It was just huge. So if you know how big a one-room schoolhouse is,
sure,
it was bigger than that.
And it was just kind of hovering there.
It was there. Then I got my mom to come outside. We both looked at the lights came on. It moved over the field and was gone just like that.
What do you think it was at this point?
UFO.
Yeah. Now, see, Sarah, we have these stories, and either Irene is making it up, which I don't think she is. She's delusional, which I don't think she is. Something was there. How do you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I can't explain that. I don't think that she is delusional. It sounds like somebody else also saw it. I don't think she's making it up. I don't know what motivation she would have to be doing that. And, people like Irene have been citing things that they can't explain for a long time, and that is not something that I doubt.
What is your next project? What are you working on next?
Good question. I am kind of spooling up a project on the nuclear weapons complex is my hope for my next project.
So really?
Stuff. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Europe is experiencing, as we speak, a radiation burst that they think is coming from Western Russia.
Yeah, I read about that, although I hadn't kept up on it today, and I haven't seen the Western Russia.
Pretty dangerous. Give out your website, Sarah, to people. Spell it out for people.
Sure. It's SARAHSCOLES.com.
And the name of the book, They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Sarah, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me, George.
Take care. On our next Coast to Coast show, for the first couple hours, Bart Costco joins us, the author of Fuzzy Future and Fuzzy Logic. He's going to be talking about strange things happening with artificial intelligence. And then Jim Bruton joins me to talk about strange things happening on a near-death experience after a horrific plane crash that left him for dead. It's an amazing story. And he's an Emmy Award-winning wildlife film director as well. So stick with us all week long. We've got some great programs for you. And then, of course, I'll be here on Sunday night as well. And we're going to be live all through the Independence holiday for you. So don't forget. For Michael Coscio, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.